Welcome back to the Weekly Juice. As always, Ryan and Corey joining you here. This is episode 15. In this episode, we have a very special guest, Chris from The Stealthy Rich. He talks about building and managing his portfolio of 60 plus units in the Houston area. Chris is a phenomenal guy who is super involved in the financial independence movement. So we are thrilled to have him on. And without further ado, I think we should bring him in. Corey, what do you think?
Yeah, this guy's got like 20,000 followers on Instagram and like just gives out free game. Like he posts all about his units, his journey. They have an awesome website. It's going to be a good episode. So let's jump in.
Couldn't say it better myself. Let's go. Well, today, as we mentioned, we have Chris from Stealthy Rich joining us. So Chris, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. I love talking real estate. This will be great.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. So I think if you could just kind of give us a little background on you and how you got into the financial independent movement, and then more so how you transitioned into real estate being your kind of main gig here.
Sure. So I've told the story a few times, but back in 2013, I was an IT consultant. I had a really good job. It was, you know, it was stressful. It was rewarding, but I knew, you know, I was like, can I have to do this for another, and I was 30 years old. I was like, I have to do this for another 30 years. I was like, this, I just got to be another way. And so one day I went to a business lunch with a friend who had just moved into town. His name was Dave. And we were like, there's got to be another way. And I had always been really kind of interested in stocks and investing and all that. But I did some kind of single stock investment. And I, you know, I always realized I had less information than anybody else, right? The home investor just felt like the odds were against me always. You know, all the market changes happened, or all the stock changes happened before market or after market. And so I always felt like I could never, you know, get ahead, or, you know, get the same amount of leverage or incentives that these, you know, institutional investors got. And so my buddy and I, Dave, we started talking. He's like, hey, we should do something, whether we start a business or, you know, do something that can help us get us out of what we call cubicle hell, right? That's where we said, well, you know what? We live in Houston. There's, you know, this is a great real estate market. We should get into real estate. And my partner, Dave, had done a few rentals, a few units in Lubbock, where he went to law school. Okay. And so he had already kind of, you know, cut his teeth on that. And was like, let's start over here. And that's where we kind of got started. And so we've done just single family rentals, you know, nothing too crazy. But we've done that now for 7 years. And so we've come a long way. We've gone from one door to we bought and sold over 80 in the last 7 years. And now I think we're right at 60 or 61 doors.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. The cool thing about that, we talked to somebody who's a certified financial planner in our last episode, which will be airing the week before you. And to hear you say that you got started when you were 30, I think a lot of people think that they're like behind the eight ball almost at 30. You know what I mean?
Right,
so for you to get started at 30 gives us like that, okay, we each, you know, we have a couple rentals. It's a small portfolio, but to be like, okay, we're on the right track. And a lot of our listeners are 25 to 34. Like you can do it when you're that age, right?
For
like you can start then, which is awesome. So I'll let you continue this here.
Sure. So what I'm most intrigued about, I think just to start us off, can you give us the story behind The Stealthy Rich and the alias? I think people would be very intrigued.
Yeah. So Dave and I, we're 50-50 partners. We're both guys. We're both married. We both have multiple children. I think we have seven between our two families. We both still have W-2 jobs.
Okay.
And so we weren't ready. We're still in this kind of teeter-totter mode where our jobs are easy enough that we keep them and we like them enough and they're flexible enough that we don't hate them. And so we wanted to kind of come up with something that could keep us out of the limelight per se, right? We didn't want to go head first and we didn't want to become a guru or some marketing engine or anything like that. We just wanted to document our journey. And it's very similar to maybe like The Millionaire Next Door, if you ever read that book, right? It's just we've been able to build wealth over 7 years and an immense amount of wealth. And do it, it's not been easy, but we've been able to do it while having a family, while having a job, while, you know, doing community service or whatever. And with all those things, we were able to balance. And so The stealthy rich is more of just gaining wealth while not flaunting it per se, right? And living in a way that's I love Ramit Sethi's book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, where he says, you know, you can spend mercilessly, you can spend extravagantly on the things you love, but you should cut cost mercilessly on the things that you don't. And so it's more about being mindful about what you spend. We're not penny pinchers. We live, you know, we buy quality things, but we are very careful what we spend our money on. So that whole kind of mantra is what drives our mindset between our partnership and the way we live our lives.
That's cool. Awesome. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways you can go in financial independence, right? In investments and different vehicles. Why specifically did you guys pick real estate?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like I said before, with stocks, I did not like... Let me put a caveat here. I still do a 401k. Mm-hmm. I still do tax advantage accounts where it makes sense, like a Roth for my wife or whatever, if I'm still eligible, but with income limits and whatnot. But what I was able to find with real estate, I would never trade on margin to buy stocks. It's just not in my risk profile, right? I wouldn't, you know, borrow money to buy stocks. But with real estate, it's totally normal and totally expected that you borrow money to buy real estate. And once I learned the power of leverage, responsible leverage, I'll say, I realized that instead of getting a 7-8% return in the S&P 500 on a good year, we are able to get 40% on our properties consistently. And that's just one of the benefits, right? And so once I figured that out and you can gain the control that you get with real estate, I can control most of the variables. And the whipped cream on top was that I realized the cherry on top was that the tax benefits. Once I realized the tax benefits, I was like, game over. I'm never doing anything else. And so that's where I became totally sold on real estate and realized it was the fastest way that I could gain wealth. And I enjoyed it. So it was like a double whammy.
Yeah. Awesome. Can you dive into the tax benefits?
Yes, of course.
Because people, I hear about it all the time. We've been doing it for a little while now and I'm still like, how much can I really get back? You know what I mean?
Right. So I'll give you an example. So last year on 60 properties, I showed a loss of $8,000. So
incredible. And you're talking about the depreciation. Loss.
So I'll explain what that means in a second. But and that's a separate, you know, you get what's called a K-1. If you're doing LLC, that's what we do. We have an LLC and you get a K-1 from your tax CPA or whoever, and you plug that number into your standard return. And so that basically lowers the rest of my income by $8,000. Now, keep in mind, we are pulling in $90,000 to $95,000 a month in revenue, right? So you multiply that by, you know, it's just insane. And so where do you get that? And so the first year that happened, I asked my CPA, I said, am I going to jail? Like, how can that be legal? Right? This is something.
Fair question.
Because I studied accounting. I know. But he's like, listen, there are so many, the government picks winners and they pick losers in the industries. And real estate has been chosen as a winner. And it makes sense because you're incentivized to provide housing to people. They want stable housing. They want all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why they do that. But to answer your question, between the interest expense, so any interest that we incur from our loans, you can deduct any expenses we have, you know, any repairs, anything like that. And then, as you mentioned, the most important thing is the depreciation. Yep. So the value of that property, you can deduct over, in our case, over 27 and a half years. And so every year it's just, and someday we'll have to pay that back, right? If we sell it or, you know, whatever, but but in the meantime, we are just not paying any taxes and it's gaining value. And so it's just very efficient. And so once we learned that, we're like, we got to buy a million of these.
Yeah. And it's cool to hear about that story, how you did this. Cause I would venture to say that almost none of our followers are full-time real estate investors, right?
Right.
And we have W-2 jobs that help fuel our investments. Is that the reason why you have kept your W-2 job? Because
100%.
Well, for now, it's got to be our vehicle to fuel investments, right?
100%. It's two things, right? So A, it's the security of having W-2, whether it be insurance for your family and just that regular income. And B, it's the bankroll to prove to your banker that, like, our bankers salivate over W-2 income. right? Right. People hit us up all the time on Instagram or on our blog. How do I get started without a job, without money? I'm like, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So you got to have, the bank is not going to lend you money if A, you don't have any experience, and B, you don't have any skin in the game. You don't have any money to put up as collateral. And so we keep that W-2 income for that reason. Our banker, every year, we're like, surely this is the end of the rope, right? Surely you can't lend us any more money. And she's like, no, you're actually more attracted to us now. And I'm like, this is insane, right? So,
yeah, one of the cool things, so the tax benefits are amazing. And honestly, you just taught me something there too. I understood the depreciation, but not to the effect that you just explained it, which is amazing. But I saw a post on your Instagram one of the other days where you talked about, and this doesn't even get talked about a lot, loan pay down.
And oh, yeah.
You put a graphic up about how much equity you built in the last month alone on 60 properties. And it was something like 60, I mean, I could be wrong here, but $60,000 or $70,000 that you just built up by paying your mortgage. That's
right.
It.
So there's a couple of reasons for that. So we're on 20-year notes. So we're much more aggressive in our principal pay down, obviously, because it's got to get paid faster. But, and so I don't get too deep into this, but this is one of our exit strategies. So rather than wait till all of them are paid off, if we're paying down, let's say $200,000 a year in principal pay down each year, that means we can refi that money back out each year and essentially live off it. And guess what? It's tax-free too. And so, because it's your own money. And so that's one way, once you get a stable portfolio, you can pull that money right back out without increasing your payments, right? Because let's say you're borrowing, I'm just making up a number, $1 million, and you pay down $200,000, and then you borrow that $200,000 back out. You're still at $1 million. Minus the change in interest rate, your note will stay the exact same.
The same, yep.
Right, and so the only question mark in that theory is the interest rates. And my perspective, the interest rates are not going anywhere for the next 10 years. So
it's funny. I just refinanced, and I was like, oh, I'm going to save all this money on my property, and then the city of Philadelphia just reassessed all the tax values, and it went up the exact amount that I refinanced to, and I was well, that sucks. But at the same time, I subtracted like a 1.5%. So I knew it was, a good.
So that's a really, that's a deep concept. We call it refi till you die. Cause so many people are like, they buy all these properties. Like I got to wait 30 years to pay them off. Right. Or be really aggressive and pay them off. And that's not nearly always the case. Right. But you're right. I mean, we're paying down $220,000 a year in just principal pay down, which is money we can't use. Right. So we want to get that money back out. And our banker, and that's another thing, if you're using commercial loans, portfolio lending, there's a lot more flexibility in getting that money back out and being very creative with just one email or one call, right? And so that's why we use our favorite kind of small regional banks, which we can talk about in a minute if you want. But it's a very viable alternative to people always ask, well, how are you going to get that money out? Well, it's really easy. You know, as long as your loan to value ratio, which is the amount that your loan versus the value of your properties is reasonable, then there's a lot of room. So our global LTV for our properties is about 56%.
Okay.
Right. So we're almost halfway paid off, which is
a lot of people have different thresholds for that. What they like. To me, I'm like, well, I could be happy with a few paid off properties, a few with 50,
Right. Well, so that's, you're exactly right. So that's our global, right? So we have some that are almost all paid off and some, like we just closed on two this week that are exactly at 80%. Right.
Yeah.
And I did that from Colorado. So
that is awesome. It's awesome. It's a snowball, man. He's just like, now you can't even stop it if you try.
My brain is chugging with and churning with different questions for you.
But when you hear that, right? When I hear things like Corona, I get really scared, right? But so far we've been very very fortunate to not have the whole shoot match come crashing down. So that's good. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So you touched on LLC, and this might be a selfish question. Corey and I are diving into that sector here, thinking about going 50-50 partners. We are doing it.
Yeah.
We are literally doing it. It's pending. Looking for just a little bit of advice on pretty much the whole game here, right? Like we talk about, you mentioned potentially getting lending, right?
Right.
We heard there's a myth, I guess. I don't know if it's a myth or true, but like it's difficult to get lending on an LLC as opposed to getting it personally going to the bank. And like, what is your recommendation for us that may be looking to go in together?
How would that- So there, you gotta determine where you're asking that question from. Is it difficult to get? There's different kinds of lending, right? So are you looking at conform 30-year government-backed loans, right? Investor property loans? Yes, you can't get those with an LLC. It's just not possible, right? But we only have one of those in all 60 of ours. It's the very first one we did. And it's in my name still. But for an LLC, once you go to what we call a local bank, right, and get what we call a portfolio loan or a commercial loan, this is not really a mortgage so much as a business loan. I mean, the house is still collateral for the loan, but when you call the bank, you're not calling for their mortgage department, you're calling for their business lending or their portfolio lending department. And I'll tell you why we love those so much. Yes, you pay a little bit more in interest. So on our loans, it's 4.75%.
That's what we thought it would be anyway.
Yeah. And they're 20 years. So it's a little more payment, right? Because it's not, most banks aren't going to let it go out, the amortization over 30 years, because it's too risky for them. And then the big thing that people don't like is usually they only lock the rate for 5 to 7 years. And so that, a lot of people don't like that, right? But that's the game. Once you get past loan 3 or 4, you're not going to qualify for a 30-year loan anyway because you have too many properties. And so, some people do 3 for you and 3 for your partner and then 3 for your wife and then 3 for your other, you could do all that. But for us, it was just so much easier to just flip the switch, form an LLC, and start getting loans from a bank. And they love lending to an LLC, right? That's no problem. And they just want to see your operating agreement. They want to see your, so here's what I send my banker every year. I send them a copy of my tax return and a copy of my, it's a personal income statement, which is essentially, we sell it on our website. It's just it's a spreadsheet, but list all your assets, all your liabilities, what you make, and a couple other things. It's basically a snapshot of your financial history.
Yeah.
And they take that, unlike buying a personal house, they don't go call up their banks or anything. They really look at that. And they compare it to your tax return, basically, to make sure you're not, way off. But that's it.
I didn't know that about the 20-year. That changes some of our numbers a little bit.
But you have to think about it. Like, so people are like, well, I don't want a loan for 5 years. I want it to. And so ours, after 5 years, it's not a balloon payment. It's a ARM. So it essentially, the rate resets to whatever the standard rate is at the time, right? And in our case, some of ours went down. It's gotten lower, right? I would have never expected. I would have never expected that. But after 5 years on a 20-year loan, you've paid down a significant amount of principal, right? So your loan is much smaller. And so we really got over that risk really easily. I know a lot of people get hung up on that. And they're like, no, I want a 30-year fixed rate. Well, you're only going to get 3 or 4 properties that way. And that's the end, right? And so you've got to either jump the LLC or get really creative and
Do you guys do an LLC before every property, or do you have one umbrella that branches down?
Yeah, so you can do what's called a series LLC, at least in Texas. I don't know how they are. Each state has different LLC rules. But in Texas, you can form a series LLC and put a property or a group of properties in different series. They're kind of like a branch of the LLC. We don't do that. We put them all in the same LLC. We're not too worried about risk. What we do is just have what's called a GL liability policy every couple of houses, right, to protect us in case someone wants to sue us or something like that. But for us, it's more just the ease, because anytime we have to get a new LLC, you have to establish a new relationship with the bank. And so we like having
And then your accountant can also charge you
No, that's true. We had a couple of LLCs because at the beginning we had different partners, and we've all bought those out since. We're now the sole 50-50 on all of them. And we have to pay our accountant 3 times for 3 different LLCs.
Yeah. Well, it's cool to hear where you are now and the type of, your loan pay down, the tax benefits, your portfolio. Kind of want to do a little bit of a rewind.
Sure.
First or second, if you could just walk us through you getting started, because that's kind of like, we're on step 2 or 3 here. So,
sure.
I think a lot of people are just diving in. What was your first or second deal like, if you could just pick one?
Yeah, so the very first one we bought, we didn't know what we were doing. We weren't doing direct mail or anything. And so we just got on the MLS. My partner at the time was an agent, so we could represent ourselves. We're now both agents. And so we found a house in an area that looked good. And what we did is we looked in areas where, we didn't want to call it a market inefficiency, but we could find, for whatever reason, if you were to buy a house with 20% down and get a mortgage, it was significantly less, like much less than if you were to rent in that area. It was I don't want to call it inefficiency, but it was definitely an anomaly. And so we said, hey, we're going to focus on that neighborhood, and that's where we're still at. And so we found a house. It was $90,000. It was a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house built in the mid-80s, needed almost no work. So it was really safe for us to start with because we didn't know what we were doing. And, you know, so we bought that house. I think the first renter in that house was paying $1,150 a month. And on that one, we did an interest-only loan. That was a house with a couple different partners because we were all really scared. And so we all pitched in together.
Yeah.
Like $7,000 each. And it was interest only. He was a financial planner, so he had access to this special kind of loan through Merrill Lynch, and it was still, you had to put down 30%. So that was the bad part. So we'd come up with 30 grand, but the payment on that house was like $90 a month, right? So our $90 payment on $1,100 rent felt really safe to us.
Yeah.
So it was a good way to cut our teeth. But so that one was the first deal. Now I'll explain the second one. The second one we did, this got really, and you tell me guys if this is too confusing, but so we bought this house. It was $40,000 off the MLS. And the reason it was off the MLS for 40 grand was the woman had gotten a like $50,000 foundation bid, right? And she's like, my house is.
What is that? What is that?
So, yeah, so in Texas, we have slabs. Right. So it's like 4-6-inch cement slab.
Yeah, I'm a slab.
And yeah. And we have, so no basements, no pier and beam or anything like that. And sometimes with the clay soil that we have, if it gets really hot, that soil can shift over time. Or if you have trees that grow underneath the house, like the roots, and it will crack the foundation. And if it's really bad, like your doors won't open and shut right, your roof will kind of split open on the top.
Okay.
I mean, some really bad stuff. Sounds scary, right?
Yeah.
And when you walk through the house, it feels like you're walking downhill, kind of. And so we walk into this house, and I'm like scared to death. I'm like, Dave, we cannot do this. This is a huge liability. He's like, it'll be fine, right? And so we called some friends, and we found someone who had another foundation guy. Of course, she had called the most expensive foundation, most reputable company in the city.
Yep, first one on Google or something.
Yep. We called another one. He's like, I can fix that for $5,000. And then I was like, okay, this is going to be sweet. And so we paid $40,000 for the house, put $5,000 in to fix the foundation. When we fixed it, we had to raise the back of the house like 9 inches. Right.
Wow.
And once that happened, it pulled the power pole off the back of the house. Right. Cause there wasn't enough give in the pole. And, you know, and then they were digging 4-foot holes in the living room. Right. To put in the supports. And I was like, this is a disaster. But so we fixed that. We did the floors. We painted. Let's say we're in it now, $55,000. Okay. We then refied that house for like 90. And so we got all our money back out and like 20 grand more, which allowed us to fuel our next few deals. Yeah. So we got all fixed. We still have that house today, and the foundation has performed fine. Right. So no issues. And that helped us springboard us to get the capital we needed to get started. And then, you know, for the next 20 houses, we either had to buy one and then flip it to get the capital necessary to buy the next one to put 20% down. And then once we get to about house 20, that's where we found out how to do the BRRRR method, right? The buy, rehab, rent, and then refinance, right?
Yeah.
With that method.
So that's
sorry. That was a lot of details. I'm
no,
sorry.
But would you no, it's good. Would you agree with the statement that you don't need to know everything before you get started, right?
That and is like, correct.
You're saying that you don't need to buy the best deal. I'm not saying to buy a bad deal, right? But you buy a deal or two, and you learn as long as it doesn't break your bank completely, and then that just gives you the tools to do the next one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just got to learn how to analyze a property and realize your first and second, maybe third deals are going to be your hardest. And you realize as long as it's not going to kill you deal, you're going to learn something from it, and it's going to propel you further for the next one. And so I think in all of our, we've done over 80 now, I would say there's probably been maybe 4 and that I shouldn't have done. But in the end, we learned something from it, and it worked out, right?
You can mitigate your risk if you're 15
exactly.
in, right?
Like. Right. Oh, yeah. right? I mean, you know, whether you need to sell it a year later or, you know, do something, there's you have all kinds of options. So you're never stuck.
It's awesome. It's really good. So there's a lot we can go into here, but I think one of the most things that we're most interested in is the fact that it seems like you have a well-oiled machine.
Yes. And
that's really difficult to treat it like a business for a lot of people. Now, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about your repeatable systems that you have, maybe yes. in terms of rent collection, even like maintenance requests, rehabs, those types of things that you got to now that can help get people off the ground.
Right. So, you know, on 60, a lot of people say we're crazy for still managing them ourselves.
Oh.
But for Dave and I, like, I don't say I want to enjoy it now, but for me, I get a lot of joy from not paying someone to do it. And so, yeah. You know, on
90% of everything.
Right. Right. So, I mean, it'd be like $9,000 a month. I'd have to pay someone to do that. And we can do it. I mean, we're both on vacation right now. He's in Utah with his family for a month. I'm here in Colorado and we're doing everything remotely. Right. It's just amazing. And so I've had two or three requests since I've been here. And we have a system. So let's start. So rent collection, we have got everyone, all of our tenants now paying either electronically with Zelle or some type of quick pay. We use Chase Bank and Chase basically runs our business for us. I love it. And so people can deposit directly to Chase in the branch, but we don't really have any cash payers. And they either pay, you know, electronically or in the branch. When they pay in the branch, they use a deposit slip. We can see their name or their address. And so we can credit everybody that way. And so, you know, rent's due on the 1st. It's late on the 3rd. On the 4th, we assess late fees. We do a $50 late fee. And we have some people that just pay a late fee every month,
yep.
which is great for us. So
yeah. I complain about that.
Yeah.
So they'll pay on the 7th every month. And we know they're good for it. And it's always just $50 more, right? And so that's rent collection. That's pretty straightforward, but any bank should be able to do that. And then we don't do credit card payments or anything like that. We don't use any property management software. We built our own. We're old school guys. We just use Excel, right?
So you built your own. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. If you can buy it on our website, actually. I think it's
cool.
To plug those in at the end. You have two.
Yeah.
Kind of jumping down here, but you have spreadsheets
with macros in them, right? So it's not for everybody, but if you're an old school Excel guy, they're awesome. So one of them is a net worth tracker. We're very firm believers in what gets measured gets managed. And so if you measure your net worth, I mean, we're not, some people on like the Choose FI or the FI train, like track it every day. I track it like twice a year, maybe, you know,
yeah.
but or like when my banker asked for it, you know, but
one of the everyday guys,
that's all right. It's cool. I live by Mint.
I'm just like,
oh, Mint's amazing. I use
I'm
Mint
on
too.
There. Just like, okay, what do I need to do to get to this?
But it's not changing.
No, it is. No, but the worst because I'm paying for my mortgage. It is changing. It's not, maybe not every
goals day. Are important. No, goals are important. Right. So, maybe I should track it more. Maybe that's a good shout out for me.
I don't think I need to tell you. I think you got it.
The net worth tracker is one where you can just kind of plug in your numbers, and it's really useful if you need to report to your banker every month or every year what your status is. That's the document I send her every year. And then the other one is just essentially a cash flow and asset tracker. So that's what we use for all of our properties to track how much money we have in them. Are they performing correctly? Are they negative? How much money are they returning each month on average? What's the current ROI totally? We also track the leases in there. We track the mortgages. We track the insurance schedule. We track the cash flow. And all that's at one single pane of glass on that workbook that we do track every day. So that's that one's – but anyway, yeah, so those are just two workbooks that we've developed and happy to share with people on our website.
That's awesome. Now, how do you – you mentioned what you have – 80 to 90 units as of now?
We're at 60 right now. 60, we've done over 80 deals, right? So we've flipped about 20 or so.
Okay. So 25. Managing 60 units, just you and Dave, how do you manage maintenance requests? Do you have, talked about a Google Voice setup. What's your system of that whole thing?
Yep. So we have the property split pretty evenly. So they know either me or they know Dave. And the one key that we love is that neither one of them know that we're the owner. And that's very important if you're self-managing. And I'll explain why. So if they know you're the owner, they're going to appeal to your emotional aspect. If they need something extra or they're not going to pay rent, they're going to, you need a buffer in there. It's very important. And so we have this buffer that we're their liaison. We are their property manager. We will go to bat for them if there's a problem with the owner, which in our case is just the other owner, right?
Yeah.
So, and so someone will call me up and say, hey, Chris, I'm not going to be able to pay rent this month. And I'm like, oh man, the owner's not going to like that. What can you do? But, I don't know if he's going to go for that. And they'll come up and it's just a much easier way to come up with a plan to get them on a payment plan. Or they say, hey, Chris, you know what? I really like some granite countertops. I'm like, well, I don't think the owner's going to go for that, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a way to just run interference. And we use that all the time to keep our relationship with our tenants very professional. And we have some of them who have lived there many, many years, right? And we're good friends with them, but they know that the owner is in charge and that they never talk to the owner, but we will, we can relay any message that they need. And so that's been a very important concept that we have employed from the beginning to prevent any type of being taken advantage of, right?
Right.
So about maintenance requests. So if they're Dave property, they contact Dave. If it's Chris property, they contact me. And we've got them pretty much on train to text us. They'll just text us a problem. And usually if it's something kind of that doesn't make sense, we'll say, hey, send us a picture, right? And then we have a list of contractors that we've built over the years that we then send the picture to and the tenant's name and address. They call and make the appointment. They go check it out. If it's under like $500, they just fix it.
Yep.
No big deal. And then they send us a bill. If it's more than that, they'll call us or text us and then we'll go through that. And surprisingly, we don't have many of those. And so it's very rarely that we have a major repair. So like I said, we have a general handyman, a garage door guy, an electrician, a plumber, a floor guy, a roofer, an AC guy. What did I miss there? A yard guy, a tree trimmer, all these things that are just on speed dial. And we use them fairly frequently. So they are very responsive to us. And what they like about working for us is that there's no nonsense, meaning that they don't, it's not like working for someone where they're going to have a lot of, feedback or say, hey, you didn't do this right. Like it's a very good relationship and we pay them very fairly.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. And so I recommend anyone who's starting out is to find those types of people, whether you go to your local meetups for real estate or, talk to your friends who are also owning properties to find who those people are, because they typically will share them, because it's not like we don't have any full-time contractors, even for 60. We have one, our maintenance guy is almost full-time, but are kind of our general handyman. But
right.
The rest of them are just, they love referrals from us.
That's really cool. Are all of your 60 units, are they all in the Houston area?
They are. And I would say 54 of them, 55, are all within 2 zip codes. Very, very concise. And the reason for that is we know those zip codes like the back of our hand. We know if someone calls us to sell us a property on any given street, I know within, I'd say $3,000 to $4,000 what the value of that house is. Based if it was in normal value, if it was in normal condition. It is.
Sure.
And so it makes it very easy for us to manage those neighborhoods, to manage those houses and buy them without overpaying for anything, because we know exactly what, and they're close to us. So if we need to go visit them, it's not that big a deal.
Especially because you're self-managing. Is there a market segment that you, people split it up A, B, D,
yeah.
C, D. Is there a market segment that you find is comfortable for you?
Yeah, so you can call it, we can call it what letter you want after I describe it. So the houses we buy are typically built from 1975 to 1990, 3-bedroom, 2-bath houses, sometimes 4-bedroom, 2-bath, single story, typically in a HOA neighborhood. So very, very vanilla, very normal. Low crime, blue collar neighborhoods. So I would say probably maybe a low B.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone has different. Some people only go A to C. So it's
right. It's
interesting to hear. But if you go higher, you're not gonna get the returns. If you go lower, you might have to deal with more issues potentially.
Exactly. No, you nailed it. That's exactly right. And that's where we've kind of, because I get friends all the time that want to do it. They're like, oh, I'm just gonna I'm just going to rent my house out. I'm like, your house would be a terrible rental, right? And I have to explain to them. I have to explain to them why. And they're like, oh, I never thought about it like that. And so we had a couple in more of the C range. Like, we have a couple duplexes that are just not great from an appreciation standpoint, but the cash flow is great, right? So you just kind of got to figure out what you're going for, whether it's cash flow, appreciation, or some blend of both.
Yeah. So here's the thing. We may or may not take this out of the actual episode. We may leave it. Let Jake, our producer, decide. Ryan and I have a, and this is just a selfish question, just to be honest with you. But please. We've met a good friend, a property manager. He's become a good friend, an investor in Cleveland. Okay, and we're in Philadelphia. And there's not a lot to invest in Philadelphia at the price point that I think you're talking about in Houston.
Right. Of course. I wouldn't expect it. Yeah.
I have duplexes. I have a duplex in New Jersey. It works great, but they're few and far between.
What city? I used to live in New Jersey.
Stratford.
Oh, area. Stratford. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So like Lindenwold-ish, but not in the city. It's great. It's an amazing performing property. It's the best decision I ever made, but there's not a lot. So anyway, long story short is that we went out to Columbus and Cleveland and met with this guy, and he's going to manage his potential properties or future properties for us. So we started this LLC, and we found a property that what he described as a C area, if you ask other people, they're looking at it as like a D or an F, you know what I mean?
And
it just depends who you ask. But we went there, and you feel a little different when you're there. It's not the best area. The cash flow is... I mean, it's $700-$800 a month. And we think, I'll just give you the numbers. It's a triplex for $60,000.
Yep.
It rents for $1,700. And
yeah,
we're on the fence. Like, we're like, he definitely wants to do it. I'm 50-50. And I don't want our first or second deal to be a really bad one.
Sure.
We have a great property management system. What are your thoughts on investing in an area that you wouldn't potentially live in?
I wouldn't live in, I'll take that back. I lived in one of our properties for about 6 months because we were building a house and it wasn't done yet. And I wasn't too jazzed to live there long term. Right? I guess the bigger question would be, what kind of tenants are you going to get? Are you going to get, you know, drug problems and potential crime issues and domestic issues? Or, or is it just going to be, you know, some solid blue collar,
Sure. It's hard to know. I think that our property manager is going to do a good job screening potentially.
Screening tenants. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we want to instill in him. But I think that's the biggest question.
Well, so the question, what we do use to rate all of our properties is very easy, is the rent to price ratio, right? And so that is, you take your monthly rent, divide it by your all in price. So whatever it costs to buy the house, property plus rehab and, you know, to stabilize it.
Yeah.
And if that number, you know, the age old wisdom was 1%, right? So if you could get $1,000 rent for $100,000 house,
this is like 2.5. Like, it's
right. So it's a, that would be a freaking grand slam for me. Right. Yeah. As long as that's realistic number, right. Or is it going to be vacant for 30% of the time or are you going to have to, someone going to get shot in there? I don't know. Right. Like,
right.
Those are literally the questions we're asking ourselves.
Yeah.
We're like, dude, I don't know. Like, the
there's probably a reason it's a 2.5-er, right. But a 2.5-er on paper is amazing. Right. And I would buy that all day long as it was legitimately a 2.5. Right. And so as long as that income is fairly stable, then yeah, I would just go for it, man. That's awesome.
Let's go.
I think it's a for sale by owner, and it's a really good opportunity
to propel us, as he said.
Yeah,
it's just such a big risk.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're making
big one,
it's our first second.
Right.
Deal, so, but it's good to hear from somebody who knows.
I mean, if it's a really,
it's renting currently for $1,700 a month. There's current.
Oh yeah. Well, why is
I don't know if they paid in 6 months.
We don't.
Yeah, why is it?
They're month to month, right? So they're not like
right.
There's a flag in the window that has been there for a year, and it was there when we drove by. So I'm like, okay, like.
Yeah. Well, so something we do typically when we buy houses, and it's got tenants in already, I just go knock on their door and interview them a little bit, right? Just like pretend like I'm the inspector or the insurance adjuster. I'm like, hey, you know, your landlord's selling the place. What's he been like, right? Oh, he has never fixed anything. I hate that guy. As soon as he sells it, I'm moving. You're like, oh, okay. And then, but you know, just to kind of get a feel for, you know, oh yeah, I never pay rent. He lets me pay like once every 3 months. I don't know, you know, just sure. those kinds of, just to kind of get a lay of the land. Cause it is a little more risky when you're investing from afar that you could get, you know, hoodwinked a little bit on something, but that sounds pretty safe. I mean, just from what you've told me.
Yeah. So that's awesome. I appreciate that insight. Cause it's, we've invested in a good property manager.
Yeah. Yeah. If you trust
somebody
them.
Who's boots on the ground, because in this scenario, we don't feel comfortable self-managing from sure. this distance.
Oh yeah. You couldn't, And he has a vested interest either too, right? He doesn't want to sign you up for something that's a disaster. Cause he's
absolutely
gotta,
not. He just got a job good. To be a full-time investor.
Oh yeah.
Property manager. So he all needs right. people like us. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, so that could
anyway,
be good.
awesome guys. Advice, but yeah. I want to, did you have something specific?
No, I want to. Is there anything you're not saying about this deal? Because we are going to.
No.
We've been talking about
this. You just have to verify the rent collection, right? To make sure that those numbers are legitimate. I am. And are there any other properties in the area sell? Are there any other triplexes that are selling, or let's just say units? What are they? How big are they?
It's a triplex, probably.
The 2-1.
It's a 2-1, 2-1, and then there's a 1-1 all the way at the top.
Okay. Okay.
And it's
650 each on the bottom.
650, 650, 400. So that's your 17.
So could you find any other unit selling for 20 grand? There is my question.
It's 60. It's oh, you mean
no? Like just any type of unit. Is there any unit going for 20 grand in that zip code or area? Right. It just sounds like such a screaming deal. What is this guy like? Want to retire or is
yes?
Like,
it's exactly literally, what he, literally. Yeah, he wants to retire.
Perfect. Okay, we bought a bunch of those. Okay, so it sounds. Legit.
But he bought the place for $6,500 in 2000.
Okay, yeah. No. So that's a perfect segue into how we buy all our properties, right? Yeah. So for him, he's making out like a gangster.
Doesn't matter what he sells it for, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. So you've hit the golden goose there.
Let's go, dude. I usually my gut steers me away from shit, and I should be like. Dude, what are you doing? But it's not, it doesn't, it's not a big buy-in for us, right?
Yeah, like
right.
We could pay it off if we needed to, you know what
right.
I mean? So,
well, yeah, you don't want to get analysis paralysis. You don't want to get stuck in that, right? But it is scary.
Because
right?
we'd be right? tight if someone swooped in and got it and we'd be like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be mad.
Somebody
right?
will
yeah.
buy it if we don't. We know that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, the numbers are insane. If yeah, that's a great deal.
Awesome.
Love that. Thank you.
Cool. But so that's what we've done, right? We do direct mail and send yellow letters
great segue.
To all of our that's how we've bought 90% of our deals. And it's the exact same thing. We mail to specific properties that are owned, that are non-owner occupied, which means they're rentals. Mm-hmm. And we mail to the owner, and the owner is usually out of state or, you know, an accidental landlord, which means they inherited the house or they got the house somehow and they don't really want to be a landlord. And so they've owned it for a long time, just like in your situation. So some of these people have owned it since the mid-90s or the early 2000s. And so they paid $30,000-$40,000 for the house. They're happy to sell it to us for $80,000, but it's worth $160,000 today, right? And so those are the kinds of deals we're going for all the time.
Got
and that allows you to then burr out of it, which means, you know, to refi all of your money back out and have it still cash flow.
What
I have too many people
know.
Call me. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, what we do know about this is we're not looking at it like it's a big appreciation play because I wouldn't be surprised if in 15
it's a cash flow play.
It's 70 grand. You know what
right,
I mean?
It's like a cash flow play.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great cash flow play.
Yeah. I just think for being in the beginning of the journey, as you'd say, it could potentially propel us or it could be, oh shit, we learned a lot.
Yeah.
Like right, right.
Shouldn't have done that. I think either way, in a way.
But if you make some cash flow in the meantime, it'll lessen that blow of it being an oops, right?
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. It's awesome to hear from somebody who's done it 80 times. So, I mean, there's a lot that we could.
Talk about the direct mail just a little bit more. So, I mean,
yeah.
That's what. So, the hardest part for us, our only, I'm going to call it bottleneck, is the deal flow, right? Is to find the deals because we can lock them up and manage them all day long. It's finding the deals that is the hardest kind of the most scarce part of the process, right? And so, that's where you have to be careful not to get too hungry where you didn't buy a bad deal. Sure. But for us, direct mail has been very successful. We've wanted to try, we get texts all the time from investors now, you know, automatic texts that say, hey, we want to buy your property. And we'll probably try that at some point, but the mail has been working for us. we usually buy one or two a month. So, but yeah, that's the best way. One thing I always tell people who are starting out, you make all your money on the buy, you know, so people who want to chase a deal and say, well, I'll sell it in a couple of years for more, it's probably not going to happen. And yeah. So, you know, buying a property at a discount upfront is the best way to ensure your success.
So just to give somebody an explanation of direct mail, and just yep. correct me if what I'm explaining is wrong. What you're doing with direct mail is you're sending mail to the owners of properties that may or may not be distressed, but you know you're getting right to the owner. So you're kind of avoiding them going onto the market, right?
Correct.
And
correct.
Then you're getting to them before the masses get to them. Sending out letters, you know it's going to work at a 1%, 2%, 3% clip, whatever that number is for you. But if you yep. know you send out 1,000, you're going to get 10 inquiries and buy two, right?
Exactly. Okay. You nailed it. And so for us, every time we get a new batch, we're like, oh man, we shouldn't be doing this. And then we'll buy two houses and make essentially $80,000, $100,000 in net worth increase. We're like, oh man, yeah, we got to keep doing this. And so you nailed it. And the best part there is that you're not dealing with a realtor. So, you're not paying 6% there to anybody, at least in Texas. And you don't have to get it ready retail. So most of the properties we buy are what we call have deferred maintenance, right? So they've had a landlord in it. It's a little tired. It needs new paint, maybe new floors. And we can do that very efficiently and much cheaper than most people. And so we are happy to buy a property, a standard property for us. Pay $80,000 for it, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, 15 to 1700 square feet.
What is that rent for?
$1,350.
Okay, cool.
Okay. So we pay $80,000. Maybe we put $10,000 in. Maybe we'll paint the place. We'll redo all the floors with luxury vinyl plank, LVP. We'll replace some appliances, the dishwasher. We'll change some light fixtures. And we'll be, let's say on a bad one, we're in at $10,000. So then now we're in at $90,000. Rent for $1,350. That's a 1.4 rent to price ratio, 90,000 or $1,350 divided by 90,000. Yep. And then we call our bank up and say, hey, we've got a house. It doesn't have a loan. We'd like to get a loan on it. We want $90,000. And they say, great, that house appraised for 130. We'll give you 80% of that. And we'll say, well, we don't quite need 80%. You know, sometimes we take the 80%, but most of the time we'll get lower just to get to $90,000, whatever that is. And we've then effectively gotten every dollar back out of what we've invested in the property, and it cash flows $200 a month or plus. And, it's just rolling. So that's the repeatable process that we're trying to do each and every day.
Yeah. That's amazing. So what is the future goals then, now that you're at this point, for the Stealthy Rich? Like, do you want to retire? How old are you?
I am 38. 38.
Wow, man. So do you want to retire? I mean, you probably could.
Yes. So we could right now, me and Dave. And so my goal, just kind of arbitrary number, was to get $10,000 a month in free cash flow, right? That's just, for me, it was just something like a goal that I could do. And so that would be 20,000, right? So 10,000 for each of us.
Yep.
And so we're more than halfway there. And then we also, what we struggle with the most is, do we pay these off? Or do we not? So we kind of segmented our journey into two parts, right? There's the growth phase, which we've been in, where we've been just putting every dollar, we haven't taken a single dollar out, put every dollar back in to either fund the business or, whatever. And then there's going to be the pay down phase. Once we've realized we've bought enough properties and then just pay down those loans, or at least enough of them to increase the monthly cash flow, right? Mm-hmm. Like we said at the beginning, maybe it doesn't make sense to pay them all down. I don't know. Or do we go into multifamily? I don't know. There's so many choices here. But I personally, if I could get to $10,000, I always tell my coworkers I'm 5 days away from quitting, right? Five bad days away. So, if I have 5 bad days in a row, I'm going to quit. And so,
but this gives you this whole thing is about flexibility and lifestyle,
right?
Correct. That's
exactly right.
Because you did this, you're now in a position to say, if you wanted to quit, you can quit. And I think that that's the biggest message. If somebody takes anything from this, it's that real estate has given you the ability to have your time back, right?
And that, number one, that's the number one.
Yeah, that's all we care about. Like, look, I would love to have a Bentley. Like, it's cool, but it doesn't, it's not like important enough to me to need to make $1 million a year when I can just get my time back. And
I drive a 2007 Santa Fe, right? And I love that car. Yeah. It's great, right?
So, yeah, stealthy, man.
Yeah, that is stealthy.
Stealthy.
I did put in for a Cybertruck, though, so maybe I'll be in trouble next year. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. I think we want to be respectful of your time. I think a couple of the things that we just wanted to go over is maybe what are some mistakes that you've made along the way that have helped you propel yourself to – or it's cool to know something that you screwed up on that helped.
So a couple of deals where we were dealing with people on the direct mail and we were quibbling over like $500, right? Like, so this is a house that, I'll give you two examples. One, it was like she's going to sell it to us for $68,000. And I think we wanted to pay no more than 67. And like, we couldn't get there and we walked away and she sold it like a week later to someone else for like 75. Right. And so, that house today is worth like $180,000.
Wow.
And I just couldn't get there for $1,000. It's so dumb. And then another one, aside, that's more like a lesson of perspective, I guess.
Sure,
and then the other one, I just had a guy who, I was all ready to give him a deal and I was going to email him the contract. And I freaking spelled his name wrong on his email address. It was like, you know, I mean, just, and so he never got the email, right? So he never called me back. And he's like, oh yeah, I just sold it to the other guy. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so
that's just dumb, right? A common error, though.
No. But I still kick myself for that. But other than that, I would just say, probably, maybe not being as aggressive with the amount of properties that we could have bought, right? I mean, I know it sounds crazy with what we've been able to do, but there have been so many, especially if you look back at the market over the last 4 years, I feel like we're starting to get to a point where it's, you know, we're kind of at a teetering point, at least in Houston, and values have gone up significantly. And I'm like, man, if I could have just bought 5 or 10 more when they were 25% less, that would have been awesome, right? But it's all about hindsight and, you just gotta be grateful for what you're able to accomplish. But we've been just very careful. I would say our partnership has been a blessing for us. We have very complementary personalities and we also see eye to eye on what our goals are. And I know a lot of people that's scary for them because they get a partner who maybe is totally different than them and wild or whatever. And that can cause a fracture in the partnership. So I would just say, I would definitely recommend a partnership because it's more fun that way.
Yeah.
My wife.
We're already having fun. We haven't done anything yet.
good. That's good. But partnerships are definitely the way to go. But you just make sure that you have a rock solid operating agreement and that you both understand what the goals are of each other to make sure that, you know, there's not crossed wires a year or two into it. And you're like, wait a second.
Absolutely.
You
know? Yeah. Do you want to go into the last, do you have something?
Sure, yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you as we have a segment of the show called The Last Drop and
It's
essentially just it's a resource that you've used in this case. Actually, maybe it could be some advice that you would give somebody just starting out or something of that nature that you kind of just leave the show with called The Last Drop because of the juice.
The last straw.
Yeah.
I would say for man, so that's a good one. I got a lot of bits of information, but I would say to be
here, yeah, share it all, man. I mean, whatever you want. Go,
say it again. What's that?
As much as you'd like to share, we have time if you do. But
the last couple drops.
Yeah.
I would just say to be for us, we have a mentality that there's not a shortage, not a scarcity mentality, right? There's enough properties for everybody, so we're happy to share all of our knowledge. And we feel like it helps everyone. And so I would just say optimism is important. Even like during these last 3 months with Corona, right? I was pretty worried at the beginning that we were going to, April 1st, we were going to have like half the rent, right? Or whatever. And I was like freaking out. But, you know, by some miracle, we got it all. We got it all for May. We got it all for June. And we have it all for July. And, you know, I just being optimistic about your opportunities and your chances and I would say being realistic, right? But knowing that it's not, you know, it's not gonna run out or anything. You're gonna be able to be successful as long as you put the work in and you know, try to be a little smart about it, right? And so in all of this, I still keep learning every day. And so whether it's learning new markets or learning new segments of the market, or, you know, learning how a tenant can destroy something, you know, a different way than I would have expected. And then figuring out how to protect from that in the future. Just always learning. I think that's an important concept, knowing that it, you can't really ever put it on autopilot, right? And there's a way to, you know, sure, I'm in Colorado right now and we have a, you know, I can do everything from my smartphone, but you, if you don't kind of focus on it regularly, it will fall apart. And so you gotta really apply your systems and tweak them consistently to make sure they're performing optimally. If that makes sense.
I think you said something important there, Chris, where you're saying that you're consistently learning. I think people could potentially get stuck. You get a point to 60 units, you know, you have a lot of really good things going for you and you can get a big head about it and then forget why you were doing it in the first place, or get a big ego. And then the fact that you're at the stage that you're at and still willing to learn, I think is the reason that you'll continue to be successful. And it's a good lesson for people that are just starting out to just always be willing to learn. I mean, I know what I don't know. And I think that's a good start, right?
100%. And I would say,
I don't know what I don't know, you know, like
just a couple on that. And we talked about like experiences and advice. Do you have specifically like a resource, whether it be a book or a, obviously your website will plug into at the end, but somewhere, something that helped guide you along your journey, right? And that you always look back on. I know you mentioned on the website, whether it was you or Dave, a book by Jeff Olson.
That book's amazing. So in fact, I listen to it once a year, and I just listened to it on the way as I was driving to Denver, because it's kind of like a refresh, right? I don't listen to every chapter, but I listen to, it's called The Slight Edge. And it's not about real estate at all, but it's essentially about improving yourself or improving your performance or your work by 1-2% regularly. And if you do that over time, the return will be immense, right? And you can use that in real estate, whether you're talking, you know, extra doors or interest or cash flow or whatever, you know, and I use it with my kids. I'm like, you know, hey, what happens if you don't brush your teeth for one night? And they're like, oh, it's nothing, right? If you don't brush your teeth for a week, you might have bad breath, right? But if you don't brush your teeth for a year, you're going to have some serious problems, right? And so that's the same idea, whether you do 10 push-ups a day and or whatever, you know, if you buy a property or you learn about some new skill in real estate, just constantly improving, even if it's small, those gains over time will add up to a significant amount. It's very hard for the human to understand, you know, to kind of process small gains over time. But over time, when you look back, you're like, holy crap, what was I able to do? It didn't feel like a big deal, right? Rather than scaling a whole mountain, just taking baby steps. And so that book really is kind of like a rah-rah, kind of like kick you in the pants. Oh yeah, you can do this. And, you know, gets me just excited for the next year every time I listen to it. So that's a good one. For real estate, there's a lot of good ones. I really like the book. It's not so much about real estate. In fact, he poo-poos on real estate, but I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. It just has a lot about mindset, about how to approach life. And I think real estate's a great way to use his concepts if you use his concepts to buy real estate, you're going to go far. So that's another good book.
Cool. Well, we want to give an opportunity for, obviously you're stealthy, so I don't know how many people you want to be reaching out to you, but you do have a website and I'm sure you have products on there. So obviously Chris at The Stealthy Rich, and your Instagram is at Stealthy Rich, right?
The Stealthy Rich.
At the Stealthy Rich. Yeah.
Yep. So we have thestealthyrich.com. We really just have kind of chronicled our journey there. And I think we're through like house number 32 right now. We're just slow, but we're kind of bleeding them out as we go, kind of doing a drip. And then we also post some other just how to build your systems and how to find financing and other types of things out on the website. And we also have, like I said, a couple of Excel workbooks that have been really helpful for us that we're sharing with people there. And so you can follow us on our journey there if you'd like to know more.
Awesome. I will personally say I have followed their journey on that, and it is an amazing tool and resource. So please go stealthyrich.com.
TheStealthyRich.com.
TheStealthyRich.com. And at TheStealthyRich on Instagram.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure. I hope we can stay in touch. We'll let you know how this property goes. And
now I'm excited, guys. That is a huge. I mean, that rent to price ratio is insane. So buy 50 of those.
Yeah. And if it's not this one, we'll find another one too. But it's just good to talk with like-minded people. Yeah. And I'm excited to follow your journey as it continues. So we appreciate
it. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back.